अभ्यनाथं वने ब्रह्मं नाश्वतांश्यालोकं शन्थं शयनं क्षुदितं हरिम्लनमुखम्बुजम्। अपि सर्टेनलि अनाथं विदाउट बीइंग प्रोटेक्टेड बाय एनीवन वने इन द फॉरेस्ट ब्रह्मन् मदी ब्रह्मणा whether or not Shma did not Adanti devour Abakam the helpless boy Brika wolves Shantam being fatigued Sayanam lying down Shuditam, being hungry. Parimlana, emaciated. Mukhambujam, his face, which is just like a lotus flower. Translation. My dear Brahmana, the face of my son was just like a lotus flower. I am thinking of his precarious condition. He is unprotected and he might be very hungry. He might have lain down somewhere in the forest and the wolves might have attacked him to eat his body. Text number 67. Ahome Nipata Durapnyam Sri Jitas Yopat Padaraya Yankam Premnaruru Kshantam Nabhyan Atam Asattamaha. Alas, just see how I was conquered by my wife. Just imagine my cruelty. Out of love and affection, the boy was trying to get up on my lap. But I did not receive him, nor did I even pat him for a moment. Just imagine how hard-hearted I am. Text number 68. Nadu uvacha mamma shucha satanayam devaguttam vishampate tat pababam avikyaya pravrinik. The great sage Narada replied, My dear king, please do not be aggrieved about your son. He is well protected by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although you have no actual information of his influence, his reputation is already spread all over the world. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Sometimes when we hear the great sages and devotees go to the forest and engage themselves in devotional service or meditation, we become surprised. How can one live in the forest and not be taken care of by anyone? But the answer given by a great authority, Narada Muni, is that such persons are well protected by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Saranagati, or surrender, means acceptance or firm belief that wherever the surrendered soul lives, he is always protected by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is never alone or unprotected. Dhruva Maharaja's affectionate father thought his young boy, only 5 years old, to be in a very precarious position in the jungle. But Narada Muni assured him, You do not have sufficient information about the influence of your son. Anyone who engages in devotional service anywhere within this universe is never unprotected. So, this is very, very surprising that someone can exist in a situation wherein others, practically 99.999% of the population of the world would live in that same situation and would perish very quickly. You see, but here Narada Muni is explaining that if one is protected by the personality of Godhead, still that person can be fully protected. And so we do not know sometimes what people have done in their past lives to do a little devotional service to the personality of Godhead. Raise it up. I think that's all right. That's all right. But sometimes we see that. So, for instance, they just had some big fires in different parts of Australia, and you see these flames come as high as the temple, two-story, very quickly, and just burning through whole towns, and sometimes you get the entire street, both sides, burnt down. The houses, cars, everything, and one house untouched. And recently, or earlier this year, I think it was, they had a big fire in an apartment building in London. And of course, the usual scenario where people, the business people trying to earn lots of money, so selling, getting rid of the cheap products for the poor people who have no choice. And so instead of putting the fireproof cladding on the building, they put the highly inflammable cladding on the building, hoping no one would ever find out until there was a fire, and then the whole world found out. But in that building, I don't know how high it was, maybe 10, 20 stories or something, and I think about 80 people died. Some got out, and there were a lot of families, because on the upper floors there was just no way to get down. And there was one lady who had a little baby, probably 1.5 or something, just a little baby. So of course that baby has no protection. It doesn't even know what the fire is. It doesn't even know there's a danger. No way it's going to get down the stairs. And the mother, understanding she would die, she threw the baby out the window. And fortunately, someone that from 10 stories, from 10 stories up, so that's five times what this temple is roof, and they caught that baby. That baby was fine. That's quite amazing. So obviously, no ability to protect itself, but in the most dangerous situation, where even, as Prahlad Maharaj says in the Srimad Bhagavatam, without the protection of the Lord, even if you have all facility for protection, and you don't have the protection of the personality of the Lord, still, you'll come to grief. So, even in a city like London, which would have the best, fire brigades and trucks and equipment in the world, with all of that, still, without the protection of the Lord, people will still die. Someone without any protection lives. And I was also reading about the history of volcanoes one time. A lot of volcanoes in the world which have caused devastation. There was one volcanic eruption, probably about 100 years ago or something. I forget exactly where it was, might have been somewhere in the Middle East, South Australia, South America or something. I can't remember exactly where it was. But there was this one man, so it was like a village. And this one man had caused some trouble, probably got drunk and caused a bit of disturbance. So they threw him in jail overnight. And while he was in jail, the volcano erupted and killed everyone in town except him. Historical thing. So he, because of the jail itself, they have the big solid walls so that it actually completely protected him from it. So everyone in the town was killed except him. So here. It's describing, about these wolves. Wolves are very ferocious. I mean, we have dogs, we have our vicious dogs, and I remember going out in Sankirtan, but there were some streets, the people were so rough, and we were going door to door. But when you walk down that street, you walk down the middle of the road. You didn't get anywhere near the pathways because the dogs were just so vicious. And, in those days, of course, you didn't have to register a dog. If your dog attacked someone, there was no real ramifications. It was just bad luck. What are you doing in our street anyway? And if one dog come out, quite often they would all come out, so you're in a lot of trouble. So the idea is to sort of go down tippy toes and try and find a house where you thought there wasn't a dog. That was the art. I remember one time I walked into this house, we used to sell different paintings and things, and I thought there wasn't a dog. But as I got into the gate, a dog came up. But he started wagging his tail, and so I gave him a little pat and I knocked on the door. And when the people answered the door, they said, "How did you get in here?" Mm-hmm. I said, "I just opened the gate, walked in." He said, "That dog won't let anyone in." So it's probably the fragrance of the incense and the prasadam from the temple that's, intoxicated him. But I remember another time I walked into a place. So I used to do this thing. I'd stand at the gate, and sometimes it's, they build houses at the back of another house, so you've got a long driveway. But they're really scary because you don't want to get stuck up there. So I'd sort of whistle and make a bit of noise and hurry ball, see if there was any dogs. Didn't hear anything, so I thought, okay, I'll go up there. So I went, got right, literally, right past one house up the side, and then come to the house. And just as I sort of looked around the corner, two Rottweilers who waited for me. Literally, they didn't make a noise because they knew I'd come up there if they didn't bark. And they waited until I got there, and then they just, just charged at me like this, frothing at the mouth. And when you've got two dogs, they get very brave. And they come up and they immediately started to try and bite my legs. I had this roll of paintings. And so I sort of just held it in front of me And so one dog would try and bite me on this side, and then because I put my paintings there, the other one knew, and he'd come around and try to bite me like that. So I was there for about 10 minutes, just, you know, with these paintings. Mm-hmm. Damaged a few paintings, but that's okay. Managed to sell them later anyway. But, and I thought, you know, I've got to get out of here because they were becoming more and more confident, you know, because they work off of fear and they're working out my tactics. And so I thought to myself, I actually have to leave. And so I started walking backwards about 2 inches with 1 foot at a time. Because as soon as I moved my foot back, they'd attack. Oh, you're not getting out of here. We'll kill you for that. And so, like that, so I moved my foot about 2 inches back, and then I'd wait a bit. And I had to do that all the way down the driveway. Like that. And somehow or another, I managed to get out of the driveway, and then they let me go.
You didn't follow?
What's that?
You didn't follow Krishna?
I was yelling at everything. I was yelling at Krishna and all sorts of other things. You know, went on Sankirtan for many years. The only dog that ever bit me was this little mutt. Because I was talking to the owner, and I thought, well, you know, if I'm talking to the owner, there's just this little dog like that. And I thought, well, the owner's here, they'll do something with the dog. The dog just come up and bit me on the back of the, you know, the ankle, and the owner doesn't even bat an eyelid. As if, oh yeah, you know, it's probably deserved that. Salesman, you know, salesman coming to my door, you want me coming back with you? But that was the only time I've ever bitten. But, you know, when you get a pack of wolves, and they're wild dogs, these are domesticated dogs. These are the ones we're talking about, so they're just household pets. You know, in the suburbs. Wolves. Whew. That's another, you know, they're stronger. You know, one wolf would kill a couple of them Rottweilers. Very, very powerful, extremely powerful, very ferocious. And their whole life is just killing, and, you know, they fight with each other daily. Mating rights and things like that. And if someone's out in the forest, you know, they have this keen sense of smell. They can smell something from, you know, miles away practically, and they'll just track it down for days. They'll just go for hundreds of miles. They pick up the scent. So there's a little boy wandering around the forest. They'll pick it up, and they'll just track that little boy down, little girl, for days. And their scent is so keen that amongst, if they, you know, if there's, say, a few deer or something, they can tell which deer is the weakest. From the scent, they can understand, oh, there's one there, a little bit ill, we're going to get that one. They have this such a keen sense of smell. But one time in one of those parks, in national parks in America, Yosemite National Park, Yellowstone or something like that, one of the big national parks, they decided that, you know, because of the tourist trade, that wolves had no place in the world anymore, and they literally removed, you know, killed a lot of the wolves and removed a few, put a few in zoos, but literally removed them out of the whole national park. And what happened was that after they did that, many, many trees started dying. And the fish in the rivers started dying. And they couldn't understand. And then they gradually, you know, investigated, and what they saw that because they'd taken the wolves out of the forest, those big antelope and moose and what have you, their numbers grew. And because their numbers grew, when they finished with the, eating what's on the ground, the grasses and the herbs and that, and because there were so many of them, they began to eat the bark of the trees, right, quite a way up. And so actually the trees started dying. When the trees started dying, what happens, of course, the salts and things gradually come up through the ground, it spoils the water quality, and the fish started dying in the river. And then what they also noticed is that among the moose and the antelope, the herds, they started to get a lot of disease within them as well, and so some of them started dying as well. Because what happens, of course, is that the wolves, they can, by nature's way, they can actually detect the weaker members of the species. Anything that's vulnerable, that's the first thing they kill. Because by Krishna's arrangement, that means that the stronger members of the species always reproduce generally. And the weaker section, anyone that's vulnerable gets weeded out. So you imagine, so they actually have the ability to sense the most vulnerable creatures in the forest. So you imagine, a little child wandering around the forest. So that's their first target. They'll leave everything aside and they'll just go for that little boy, little Dhruva. Imagine little Dhruva wandering around the forest. And he'll be the first target, should be, because he's the most vulnerable. And that's the natural way of Krishna's arrangement. But and of course, then they come at you in a pack. So, if you've got two dogs, you imagine you've got 20, 30 wolves surrounding you. How much hope do you, is there for a young child? Even if you had a gun, you still wouldn't have enough bullets to survive. Here it's describing that, for Dhruva Maharaj to just live in a forest with all sorts of wolves and tigers and this, that and the other, it's a miracle. It's unbelievable that he would actually survive. And yet, Narada Muni, one may question that, here's the spiritual master, and he's quite happy for this little boy to be in the forest alone. You imagine a spiritual master in ISKCON giving that instruction. Oh, your parents come to the temple with the little boy. Yes, this little boy, yes, send him off into the forest alone. The problem, the ramifications, they closed down the whole movement. So the Radha Muni is quite happy. No, he's hidden in the forest. And this is Saranagati. Now, the way Prabhupada presents it is quite interesting in that he says, Saranagati or surrender means acceptance or firm belief that wherever the surrendered soul lives, he is always protected by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Saranagati doesn't just apply to ourselves, but it applies to, we know that others are also protected by the Personality of Godhead. If they're surrendered, then they're also protected by the Personality of Godhead. And of course, that is the way that Srila Prabhupada established this movement. He understood that if devotees take shelter of the process coming down in the line from Narada Muni in the as we know, Narada Muni instructed Srila Vyasadeva especially to promote bhakti, surrender to the personality of Godhead through the Srimad Bhagavatam. So this detailed information is coming down from Narada Muni, and Srila Prabhupada is understanding if people follow that same process of surrender as Narada Muni gave to Guru Prahlad Maharaj, then they will also be fully protected even in this Kali Yuga. So Srila Prabhupada was very, very confident. So he would establish temples in all different parts of the world, some very dangerous. And then, after establishing a little center and a few devotees who he understood would implement exactly what Srila Prabhupada had showed them, that they would just keep doing that those things in bhakti, Srila Prabhupada could then leave and go to another part of the world and establish another temple. And he knew that they would be protected by the personality of Godhead from the influence of Kali Yuga and from so many different dangers that exist, of course, because we know that when one becomes a devotee of the Lord, Srila Prabhupada describes that it is, in essence, a declaration of war on Maya. So you're not just challenging a pack of wolves, you're challenging Maya Devi herself. And she had many wolves, demons, rakshasas, vampires, ghosts, goblins. Sometimes different devotees have had experiences where different ghosts have come and tried to attack the devotees. And they're very surprised. Chanting Hare Krishna. From even Srila Prabhupada, when he was, I think after the League of Nations, he then he had nowhere to live. I think it was just after that. I'm not sure if it was just after or just before, but then, he had nowhere to live, but he somehow come to his attention. There was one old big house, but it was vacant. And he wanted to perhaps utilize that and continue writing his books and preparing, to try and establish a Krishna consciousness movement. But they said that it's haunted. And Srila Prabhupada went there. That's in the movie. He went to this house and he'd have a light and he'd be writing and reading and studying. And this ghost came to try and harass Prabhupada. So even some of the Prabhupada stature, pure devotees, still the ghost is coming. So we shouldn't be surprised that sometimes devotees may get harassed. And it mentions in Srimad Bhagavatam sometimes, evil spirits, evil planets, ghosts, and this and that and the other, or haunted people. Or crazy people, sometimes single out devotees. They get somehow their envy and their tendency for violence, they especially want to do to the devotees. And anyway, Srila Prabhupada preached to this ghost, to sort of, I'm doing my service here for Krishna. And, you have no business here and there's no benefit, you should sort of move on. So Srila Prabhupada was completely fearless, but he didn't leave the house. He didn't get driven away. He understood that I am completely protected by the personality of Godhead. And we see also in the beginning of the movement, when Srila Prabhupada was in the Bowery, and he was staying in the loft, and there was one boy that was also sharing that area. And then he'd come up one day, and he was, somewhat drugged out on the drugs in those days, which is nothing compared to, the drugs these days, which You know, those days the drugs usually took a fair amount of time to turn you completely crazy, unless you were a little bit crazy beforehand. But the drugs these days, within 1 or 2 days, you know, brain gone. But, you know, he'd come up to Srila Prabhupada, eyes, you know, blaring, and Prabhupada could understand that, you know, his life was in danger. He literally just left everything, and, you know, he was about 70 at that stage. 70 years old, he had to bolt, sprint down a couple of flights of stairs, out onto the street, just left everything, left his typewriter, left his books, left all his possessions. Ran for his life because he knew, you know, he was in danger. Even, you know, personalities like that. So what to speak to us? But still, he was protected. there were different times also when, as a young, might have been a boy or a teenager, and there was the Muslim Hindu riots, and people were killing each other in the streets. We're just bodies piling up, hundreds and hundreds of bodies just killing each other. And one mob saw him because he was walking home and they chased him. They just wanted to kill him. And somehow or another, he, you know, by Krishna's arrangement, he avoided that. But one time he did actually get injured. He was, I think he was in Delhi, and like a big bullock. He was going down the street and it just gored him and, you know, injured him. So, you know, it's the nature of this stuff. So don't expect it, you know, won't happen to us. Especially sometimes when you're devoting, because as Prabhupada says, you declare war on the material energy. So, you know, there's a lot of dangers and all sorts of unusual things can happen in Kali Yuga. But Srila Prabhupada was confident that just as he was always protected, you know, with a, you know, slight injury here and there over the course of a whole lifetime, but just as he was always protected by following the principles coming down from Narada Muni through his spiritual master, that even after his departure, or after, you know, temporary departure, he'd open the temple and then go to a different place. He understood that if they followed these principles of bhakti, you'd be fully protected. Just as Dhruva Maharaj. So this is the history of you know, devotees. So not that, you know, when we become a devotee and start chanting Hare Krishna, all of a sudden all the dangers of this material world vanquish and it becomes like paradise. No. This is the material world. This is Kali Yuga. This is Melbourne. And there are worse places, much worse. And so, you know, they're there. And one would be very foolish. You know, actually, I feel safer in a forest with the wolves than some of the suburbs around Melbourne. They're worse than animals. You know, they get on this intoxication and they're worse than animals. They're just literally. And especially when they get in a gang and they're all drugged up and, you know, what have you. Crazy. You know, this is the concrete jungle, they call it. You know, a crazy, wild, violent human is more dangerous, you know, than a wild animal. So, but, you know, by taking shelter of this. And so what does it mean to take shelter of Srila Prabhupada? Srila Prabhupada has given us full shelter from the time we wake to the time we lay down and close our eyes. So as soon as we wake, we rise out of the bed, and the first thing we do is we offer our obeisances. The first thing. As soon as you wake up, you just find a spot on the floor, and the first thing you do is you offer your obeisances to Srila Prabhupada. So as soon as you wake, you're taking shelter. the very beginning. And the last thing you do at night, offer obeisance to Srila Prabhupada. And, you know, if you're taking shelter of one of Srila Prabhupada's representatives, you know, his disciples or grand disciples in a diksha or siksha relationship, you may offer obeisances to them as well. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then, of course, purify oneself, take bath, Mangalati. Vishwanath Chakravarti, the course says, one who performs the Mangalati ceremony and recites the prayers to the spiritual master, at the time of death, that person returns to the spiritual world. If one sings those prayers, Mangalati prayers, one becomes qualified to return to the spiritual world when they leave this body. Yeah. If one sings them with faith, and then of course we take shelter to Tulasi Dev, sing the prayers to Tulasi Dev, Narasimha, offer obeisance to the Vaishnavas, take shelter of all the Vaishnavas, chant our japa 16 rounds, or as you know, if we're heading towards that, chant, you know, whatever rounds we can, at least one. At least one a day. At least one if you want some protection. There's a lot of dangers out there. One round. Better to do one every day than, you know, 32 now and then 6 months later another couple. One every day at least. And, you know, gradually you can come up to 16 rounds. Which is very, very powerful, because the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, that is Krishna himself, and that is the most powerful means of attaining protection from the influence of material energy. And then, of course, we perform Guru Pujas, so we offer the prayers to Srila Prabhupada in the temples, and to we may sing the prayers to our the representative of Srila Prabhupada, if one is taking shelter. And here, Srimad Bhagavatam, which is done also daily, and all of these things are done daily. And so even if one is at home, because these days you can just listen online, or you can just open up the Srimad Bhagavatam, just read the verse and the purport at home. Okay? And if there's anyone there, you can have a chat about that over breakfast. Have prasadam. So, like an inoculation, it prevents you, it purifies the heart, very, very powerful in removing the contaminant, and, you know, literally inoculating from becoming contaminated. And then we perform a little service, which can be done anywhere. And while we're performing, so we can perform service in the temple, we can perform service when we go to work. We go to work, and you know, we know that if a small portion of our earnings is given to Krishna to, you know, assist in maintaining the temples and maintaining the devotees who are preaching, maintaining all the different festivals and programs in the worldwide ISKCON and the local ISKCON, and also if one's family, if one is helping their family to become spiritually situated, their income is also being given to Krishna by that. If one has a family, and the family may not be able to come to the temple very much, but they're helping the family to chant Hare Krishna, to, you know, understand this process of bhakti, how to take shelter, then that money which is used to maintain the family for that purpose of helping them in their spiritual life, side by side by helping them in their material life, that is also going to Krishna. That is also service to Krishna. Many of the different activities that one can do at home, such as one may have a garden make some flowers and vegetables, which one offers to the little pictures of Krishna at home. That is other different forms of bhakti. And one, as one goes through one's activities at home, one or at work, one can be remembering the different stories of the Srimad Bhagavatam and doing a little chanting Hare Krishna and helping other people to understand Krishna consciousness. So that person is also engaged in Krishna consciousness all day long. They don't necessarily have to be at the temple. It is absolute. Krishna is everywhere. And of course, at the end of the day, Srila Prabhupada gave us what's called the ISKCON sandwich. It's very delicious. Two pieces of bread and the filling in the middle. So the bread is our morning program. Then we go out, we're either working or dovetailing that into Krishna consciousness, or we may be at the temple or at Sankirtan. That's the filling. And then at the end we come home, and whatever, because we're dealing with the material world, naturally each day it's very easy to pick up some contamination or some influences. So in the evening when we come home, take a bath again, at least twice a day. People should take a bath, once in the morning, once in the evening. This protects us. You wash off externally all the contamination. If you have, if the body and the senses are purified in the activities and purified in body and the clothing, it helps the mind to be purified. And if the mind is purified, mind can be peaceful and very easy to think of Krishna and the spiritual topics. If the senses are engaged in unclean activities and the body is unclean, then the mind becomes contaminated and very hard to think of spiritual things. So we keep the body cleansed, we keep our environment cleansed. This is what we learn from Srila Prabhupada. So we come home, we take a bath, and then again, we have some prasadam, we do a little puja, like to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Gaura Aarti, and we might read a little something before we take rest. Prabhupada would say, Krishna book is nice to read in the evening. There's nice stories and gives you, so we have some philosophy in the morning, in the evening. Some stories are a little easier to digest, especially if you're a little tired from a day's work or what have you, and it's very attractive. Finish any rounds that may be there, and of course throughout the day trying to avoid breaking any regular principles and causing offences. And then one offers obeisances and lays down to take rest for that. And you can do that every day. Now that program that Srila Prabhupada has given means that every single day, 24 hours a day, there is no one in this world who can't be completely protected by the personality of Godhead. Everyone, every single time. So he has given that. That is the shelter of Prabhupada. That is the shelter of all the acharyas. And Srila Prabhupada says, when you follow the instructions of the acharyas, just as Prahlad Maharaj followed the instructions of Narada Muni, and he preached even to his class friends, the sons of demons. And Prabhupada mentions that if you follow the instructions of the acharyas, you're associated with them. They're there. Don't think that they're not there. There's two ways to associate with Srila Prabhupada, the Vaishnavas, the acharyas, Krishna. One, sometimes they're physically there, the Vapu. And the Vani means they've given some instructions and you follow that, they are there. You're associating with them. And by trying to remember their instructions, you're associating with them, and if you execute those instructions very carefully with great faith, he says you're actually worshipping their lotus feet. It's non-different from massaging their lotus feet, serving their lotus feet personally. They take it like that. We're so fortunate. When the acharyas see that we perform any little activities in devotional service, all of those great personalities, the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, Vishwanath Chakravarti the core, Narottam Das the core, Baladeva Vijayasam, Jagannath Das Babaji, Guru Kishore Das Babaji, Bhaktivinoda the core, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati the core, Srila Prabhupada, they're all applauding. Look at this devotee, little devotee, making some garlands. This devotee offering obeisances, and they're ecstatic. You have to remember that these acharyas, all these great devotees, they were prepared to die to give us this opportunity to just offer our obeisances, to chant Hare Krishna, to have a little prasadam. Each and every one of them were prepared to give their life. Srila Prabhupada once said, if my spiritual master asked me to go to the big cities and preach, but if he had said, you go to the forest and preach, I would have gone there. With the same enthusiasm. So when they see us, you know, one time I was up in Sydney, and the devotees, I said, have you done your Gayatri? He said, oh, you know, Gayatri, that's not a big thing, is it? I said, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta in Duntown, it risked his life. They wanted to kill him because he wanted to give people like us the chance to go, and they wanted to kill him. And you're being flippant about, you know, chanting your Gayatri. You chant your Gayatri, you'll be so pleased. So all these little activities. So in this way, very easy, we get the same protection as Dhruva Maharaj, the same protection as Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad Maharaj said, you know, in his humility, don't think I'm such a wonderful devotee in one sense, you know, paraphrasing his thoughts, but everyone can take to this process. Everyone, every single person. That has been stated in the scriptures by all the acharyas, Prahlad, Dhruva. Every single person can actually take to this process and get the same protection as Prahlad Maharaj, the same protection as Dhruva Maharaj. You know, we don't have to go to the forest. We come to the temple, have a little prasadam, chant and dance, hear a little Krishna consciousness, and still we feel that that's too much. So we're not being asked to do any of the things that these personalities did. But if we do that, we still get the same benefit that all those personalities have got. And we see this all over the world, that those who do take shelter of Srila Prabhupada's ISKCON sandwich, they feel very nourished, very satisfied, and they're very strong and healthy, even amidst all the great dangers of Kali Yuga, even if they're preaching boldly. So I'll leave it there. If anyone has any good questions or comments, thank you. Have a question. Yeah.
So you were speaking before about ISKCON sandwich, of course, like the morning program and services and the evening reading and things like that. But like often, like we feel like in reality, like it doesn't seem awesome. But like for example, sometimes you give advice because there's so many services to do during the day that maybe cut down the morning program or we reduce the reading.
It's a very interesting question because, see, when I joined in 78, just after Prabhupada left. So everything was pretty much as Prabhupada had it. It was going on here in Melbourne. I joined here in Melbourne and then I left the next day on Ramai Swami's Hare Krishna preaching bus, and we travelled then. But every temple I went to in Australia, and even on the bus, we had the full morning program and the full evening program. We also had a lunchtime reading in kirtan of Vaina Gopal, who's, you know, just passed away, Prabhupada disciple up in Uganda. And he used to do these beautiful bhajans and kirtans, and at lunchtime he or Ramai Brahmacharya in those days would also give a class on the nectar devotion. And for years and years and years, every single temple, you could go to any temple in Australia and they had a full morning program and a full evening program. And I'll tell you what, it changed. What happened was, and to this day it's never been properly, you know, put back to in the same glorious way that it was there. You know, the morning program, basically every single devotee that was in the temple was in the temple room. And if you went outside, if anyone went outside and saw a devotee who was not in the temple room for the morning program, they'd be thinking, is there something wrong? You've been ill, something, you know, it was unusual. They had if they had to have a service, oh well, I'm cooking. Oh, okay. No, so there was no, you know, you didn't chant out there. You didn't, you know, there was kirtan, there was class. And when we played, when we did the, even in Melbourne, when we did the Jairada Madhava, apparently everyone had instruments. Kirtan, you know, did Jairada, it was like so wonderful. You know, everyone had instruments. These days you're scared to pick up instruments because, you know, one person's playing, and then if you're a little out of tune, you're just learning, you know, but not touching. In those days, everyone was confident because there was so much noise, you know, you just pick it up. And the evening program is the same. Every devotee was in the temple for Guru Arati. And then Bhagavad Gita class, and then hot milk after Bhagavad Gita class. Wonderful. And then what happened? A lot of our services used to be, we'd go out during the day and we'd collect funds during the day. Maybe distribute a few books on the way home, and then we'd come back, always back in time for Vishala. Have a bath, have Vishala, evening program, go to bed. Then what happened? We started doing paintings. Now, paintings was something that was sold best door to door in the evening. You could do it during the day, but you could do it just as well. And from that time on, in Australia, as it spread all over Australia, the evening program diminished significantly. Because usually the most senior devotees were also the most fired up Sankirtan devotees, and they were no longer present in the evening program. They gave anyone who had half an excuse, then, oh, you know, well, someone say, you know, he's the leader, he's not even there, even though he's out on Sankirtan. And from the diminishing of the evening program, there was a gradual diminishing of the morning program and other things like that. And then, you know, I remember I was in New Zealand and they said to me, oh, Gungi, you know, let's try and get some devotees to the evening program. So what I used to cook pizza. I used to cook pizza, you know, even with pizza, you know, well, certainly got bigger numbers. It's very hard to cook pizza and things every night. But, you know, it really sort of knocked it back a little bit. But actually, we should be very, very mindful that is the full protection program that Srila Prabhupada has given. Completely purified in the morning, so we're ready to face the material world. We're ready to interact with Maya, who's declaring, you know, there's a war going on. We're quite strong. We've done our morning program. In the evening, you know, Maya's got a few good licks in, you know, and we come home and we just completely free that all off, and then you're ready for the next day. It's like that. So, without the evening program, if you pick up a little contamination and it doesn't really get fully washed off, you may be a little, you know, haphazard, a little hesitant, a little under the tamaguns during the morning program, and might not embrace it as much. And gradually, day by day, that contamination can pick up and gradually, you know, wear a devotee down. So it's, if it can't be done in the temple, because not everyone lives in the temple, because in those days everyone used to live in the temple, but still at home it's very easy. In fact, it can be easy because you can actually shorten it a little bit, so you can sing the Sava prayers in 5 minutes. You know, you can do the whole Mangalarti in 10 minutes, really quick, like that. So you don't necessarily have to spread it out to a long kirtan, but you can do it. So you can actually at home, you can do all of that, but in a much shorter time, but do it in the evening program as well.
You want to tell us something about Vrindavan Das Thakur?
Well, Vrindavan Das Thakur, disappearance day, a great acharya, he wrote the Chaitanya Bhagavad. Yeah? And all of the different teachings of all the acharyas, especially from Chaitanya Leela, Srila Prabhupada has taken all the routine of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as we've learned from the acharyas, and he has put it in a way that we can follow a similar routine that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu followed. We learn that from Chaitanya Bhagavat by Vrindavan Das Thakur and Chaitanya Charitamrita by Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami. But I won't say too much. Mm-hmm.